It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In the wake of a tragedy, how do we make sense of what's taken place? As part of its Enough Violence, Artists Speak Out program, Contemporary Craft has invited Hunter College professor Steve Gorlick to speak this Monday in Pittsburgh. His focus is on violence in the media and the way it affects our daily lives. Professor Gorlick has served as a consultant to government agencies during times of crisis. He was part of a research team called to Oslo, Norway, after the Anders Breivik bombings, and was interviewed by the Huffington Post in the aftermath of last year's Sandy Hook tragedy. He joins us now by phone from New York. Steve Gorlick, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much.
Are you unfortunately finding increased need for the work you do in light of events like last year's Sandy Hook tragedy?
Well, people who do the research that I do look mostly at the aftermath of incidents. So it's not as if we're involved in the kinds of investigative tasks that would keep us busy in that way. But we are very much faced with trying to figure out how communities are dealing with these events and what kinds of sense-making unfolds after something bad happens. It is sadly a busy time in this field.
And when you use the phrase making sense, and people often do use that phrase, but can we, is there a legitimate way to make sense of these kinds of things, or do we just have to find some way to explain, reconcile, and then move forward?
Well, it's a very good question, because more than there being a legitimate way, which I'm not sure there is, there are uniquely human ways and many different ways that people make sense. You know, sense-making starts right after something tragic happens. It's part of what makes us human. It's part of how we try to figure out exactly what happens. It's a part of an instinct that we use to keep ourselves safe. But the almost immediate sense-making in the aftermath of something is a time when sometimes we get ourselves into a little trouble, being vulnerable to wanting to know what happened. We might latch on to sort of rumors and other things that we think might have happened. The press, especially in a 24-hour news environment, is vulnerable to that also. So we immediately make some sense, and sometimes it's not sense.
Do you find that these events strengthen or weaken a community?
I think that it's hard to see what happens in a community, because most of us are watching communities through the lens of media coverage and things. The communities that I've looked at closely often have an instant and quite extraordinary altruism response, where solidarity and community communities can come together. Where we get into trouble is where the incident is one where the facts are contested. This is a really messy situation in which a community might, for example, disagree on who was responsible for an event. You know, part of when we make sense is coming up with for good or bad, who we think bears some responsibility. And once a community has decided that, if a community split over what the cause of a tragedy is, it can be a community fracture too, right along with the altruism.
How does the portrayal of violence in the media affect our daily lives? Have we become anesthetized to violence to some degree because of movies and video games and other media?
You know, anesthetized is a hard word to pronounce, first of all.
Yes.
It's something that people talk about. I worry about something else. The pervasive violence and depictions of violence are desire to attend to that and to pay attention to that is just absolutely inevitable and human. But one of the things I worry about that it does...
Well, I'm sorry, why is that inevitable?
Because part of our protective instincts as human beings is to be aware of danger and to perk up when we hear news about danger. Where we get into trouble is when we begin to perceive the world in distorted ways and begin to form some very misplaced perceptions about what we should be afraid of and what we shouldn't be afraid of. Sometimes in the aftermath of violence, We get concerned about something that's relatively infrequent and don't pay attention to all sorts of daily perils that we should be very concerned about.
And as long as we're throwing around the word anesthetized, which you know I'm having trouble pronouncing as well, are we becoming anesthetized to violence because we see so much of it in real life? Because we've had in a little over a decade or so things like 9/11 and Katrina and Sandy Hook, and that's really just scratching the surface. The things that are traumatic that maybe came around once in a lifetime, you'd have one Pearl Harbor, and now you have several Pearl Harbors.
Yeah, not only that, but in contemporary times, and I mean in this instant world, contemporary times means right now, we see and hear things instantly, and we see everything about something that happened. You know, when the plane landed in the East River, safely it turned out, I was immediately aware that this would be one of the most sort of instantly publicized and depicted events that the media had ever seen, and it was. So part of the issue is that we see so much so quickly, so pervasively, that we begin to really form a picture of the world in which we see these things as just constant and inevitable, when in many cases they aren't that much more frequent than they might have been decades ago.
Well, part of it is we have the access to it, but is part of it too that we just need, you know, the landing of that plane by Captain Sullenberger, you know, who has been rightfully elevated to hero status. Is that the kind of thing that we need to see more of? That when that happens, we really want to latch onto it because, hey, here's some good news. Here's a story about people surviving a potential tragedy.
Oh, I think that in the immediate aftermath of any catastrophe, we almost instantly begin to look for both heroes and folk devils. And it's not that there aren't legitimate heroes to be worshipped and to be cherished. It's that in our desperation to immediately understand something that's happened, we might latch on to some curious heroes and we might stigmatize some people who don't deserve it in our desperation. One of the extraordinary things about the work that's being shown in the exhibition at Contemporary Craft is that this is not work that looks to come to easy conclusions or easy closure to painful problems like violence and catastrophe. In some ways, it's less closure art and craft than it is work that opens up some painful issues for a more full vetting, which is really the trick for long-term healing is to not seek, as we do sometimes in society, such instant closure. You know, we ask victims also. We want them to grieve, but sometimes you can tell the public is getting antsy and says, well, okay, it's time for closure. Well, closure is a really problematic concept. Sometimes it requires opening before you can close.
So, all right. So then how would you best suggest that we begin the process? And if closure is not the right word, of at least getting to the point where we're getting on with our lives because we have to.
We absolutely have to. And I personally have had to in the case of 9/11. But I think part of the way we do it is by doing something counterintuitive and something that the artists in the exhibition are doing. We, in a sense, walk toward the hurt and the darkness rather than walk away from it. Now, that doesn't mean sort of, you know, flagellating ourselves, but it means after getting over sort of the initial shock of incidents, there are aspects of things that happen to us that we simply have to face in the fullness of their pain. And we can do that in all sorts of ways. There are professionals that help with this. There's music and art and literature and all sorts of ways that we can heal. We can ourselves create as a way of healing. But eventually, I think we just have to face often the horror of what happened to us. One thing that's been I've been marveling at. Another key here, I think, is what the residents of Newtown showed us in the last months of December. Part of the healing also is for people in society moved by altruism to be helpful to a community like Newtown, to understand that in a sense and in some ways, the ultimate healing comes when people are left alone to grieve and come to terms with events in their own terms and on their own schedule. Sometimes society has a closure schedule and a healing schedule that's quite different than people who have been touched directly by something horrible.
Is the proliferation of tragic events around the world something we are going to have to accept as the norm? And obviously nobody knows the future and what's going to happen, but it is beginning to seem unavoidable that violent events and tragedy is just part of our modern world, part of the 21st century. And if that is so, then how do you see that impacting society in the future?
I think we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that we are going to be seeing and hearing more about violence incidents more instantly and in real time. When something happens, if I had a child who was visiting a certain city now, and I heard that there was an event that occurred, some sort of a bombing or something, I would know about it even while I'm on the phone with you. I'm not looking at my iPhone now, but I have all sorts of tweets and such coming up. What we're going to have to all get used to is living in a real-time world where we know about things immediately and not jumping to the conclusion that that's inevitably means that the world itself is becoming a more dangerous place. In some ways, there are all sorts of categories in which the world is becoming a more safer place, but it sure doesn't seem that way when we are sort of immersed in media-saturated violence.
Our guest has been Hunter College Professor Steve Gorelick. He's speaking this Monday in Pittsburgh as part of Contemporary Crafts Enough Violence Artists Speak Out program. Professor Gorelick, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
I thank you so much.
Coming up, how innovation and entrepreneurship is changing the practice of law, and a conversation with actor John Davidson. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.